There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the bill we got? I mean, the bill we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
And it's Jeff Poore filling in for Sean Sullivan today on FM Talk 106.5, FMTalk1065.com. Feel free to reach out to us, 251-343-0106. That's telephone and text. Or you can talk to me personally on Twitter at Jeff_Poore. Today I'm in Huntsville, Alabama, in the WVNN 92.5 FM 770 AM studios. Why Huntsville? Why the hell not? No, I want to thank my friend Dale Jackson for letting me fill in, use his studios to fill in for Sean today. Sean's away, but we got a lot to talk about. And holding my hand through this whole ordeal today, back at the home base in Mobile is Dalton. What's going on, Dalton?
Hey, Jeff. Yeah, not holding your hand at all. You're good at this, and plenty of politics to talk about, of course, after last night's elections.
Right. So I guess the big picture stuff everyone's kind of talking about, the president was just talking, or he's still addressing reporters right now, is the national midterms and the shakeup in the House. The Senate probably did a little bit better than a lot of people expected. Republicans hold the Senate, but the House, it didn't work out for Republicans, and that's just kind of the natural course of events in a midterm election after a presidential election, particularly in a one like we had in 2016. But that's what happened. My estimate was off. I missed it by about 13, 14 seats. I thought the Republicans would hold, but obviously that didn't happen. Some of those races, I think the big ones, Donna Scioli down in Florida, Barbara Comstock in the D.C. suburbs of Virginia. Some of those didn't go Republican. That was probably the writing on the wall. We kind of got an idea early in the night it wasn't going to be a good night for Republicans running in the House. So that's where we are. What I'd say going forward, what I think is going to happen, what you're looking at, post 2010 election, there's a lot of gridlock. Not a lot got done. Obama had a pretty successful first 2 years of his first term, passing Obamacare. That was his big landmark thing. I think we're going to look back at these 2 years for Trump. We're going to look at the two judicial confirmations, and we're going to look at the tax cuts. Those are going to be Trump's signature moments. But what I expect going forward, I think, when Republicans took the House in 2010, there were a lot of these last-minute, midnight standoffs where Democrats and Republicans couldn't agree on a budget, and they had to do these continuing resolutions where they just kicked the can down the road, or they did a lot of these things that just weren't politically feasible to get done long term, so they had to do these patchwork things. Get ready for a lot of that again. Get ready for the standoffs and the politicization of the budgets and all these things like that. There'll certainly be a lot of political drama, political intrigue, I think, but that's kind of what we're heading to. On the other side of this, and I mentioned that this morning in my appearance on the morning show on FM Talk 106.5, I'm not sure that we're going to see full on Maxine Waters by the Democrats in the House. I think there'll be a little bit of that. I think they have subpoena power, and obviously they're going to want to do a lot of things, to buddy up Trump, especially heading into a 2020 presidential election. But I'm going to give Nancy Pelosi the benefit of the doubt right now. I think she sees a potential for problems if the Democrats overplay that card. Now, it may get to the point where they need to keep the base together, and this is something they're going to have to do to keep that base engaged for 2020. But I think with a Democratic primary, we'll have a crowded field and probably a lot of ugly things going on. I I suspect that there'll be a lot of energy surrounding Democratic politics for the next 2 years. I think we'll see a feel, perhaps Kamala Harris, Cory Booker, you know the names, Joe Biden, maybe even there'll be some sideshow like Michael Avenatti or something. You know, all these people that are going to run for president against Trump, they're going to be lining up. They're going to keep the Democratic voters interested and engaged. I would just say that I would look back to the 2008 run between Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama for that party's nomination. I mean, there's a lot of things going on. Obviously, we're going to hear a lot about Iowa going forward. We're going to hear a lot about New Hampshire. You know the routine of presidential politics. So I don't know what goes on in Congress. Is it going to be as key? Are we going to, you know, with all these hearings, let's just look at how it worked out for the Republicans. Go back to this Benghazi Select Committee where they really went hard after Hillary Clinton. And, you know, what did that accomplish? What did any of these things they did when they called up Eric Holder, held him in contempt of Congress? All these, did they, for the Fast and Furious gun running scandal, did all these things really move the needle that much? In some ways, some people think it backfired on Republicans and it led to a second term for Barack Obama, that, you know, Republicans were perceived as the party of obstruction and Democrats are perceived as the party of progress. Well, now we get kind of a flip of that. Are the Democrats going to be the party of obstruction? That remains to be seen. So I tend to give Nancy Pelosi a little bit of credit for what she does. She's a really savvy fundraiser. She knows the politics. I think if she's looking at it right now, you kind of could tell by what she was talking about, you know, in her early remarks, her initial remarks. She's talking about bipartisanship. She says that any impeachment effort would have to be bipartisan. When you start hearing that kind of, when you hear the word bipartisan and you hear it from somebody that's, you know, ideologically rigid and partisan like a Nancy Pelosi, that makes me think maybe she's going to kind of hold some of these cards and not play them till later on. So that's just my prediction. I think there may get a point where what if Trump starts rising in the polls, his approval numbers go up, then maybe they need to do more to kind of muddy him up and, you know, set themselves up for a 2020 presidential run. But that's the national perspective, you know, and I'm going to talk more about what happened in the state of Alabama in the next segment, but I think it's just kind of important to lay that out there, what you guys should expect, kind of where I'm thinking things are going to be. There's going to be a lot of late nights and a lot of stuff like this, but, you know, there'll be a little wane, I think, for the holidays in politics. But I fully expect, you know, a year out of Iowa that these campaigns will start launching. There'll be a lot of interest, a lot of intrigue, and it'll be all about, you know, well, what's going to happen in Democratic politics. It'll be a much different Democratic primary than the last go-around, where we kind of went through the formalities of Saturday night debates and four candidates that, you know, with Hillary Clinton, Bernie Sanders, and Sheldon Whitehouse, and Jim Webb. I mean, a lot of these kind of pretender candidates up there on the stage. I don't think we'll have that. I think it'll be much more lively, and I think there'll be a lot of kind of, you know, there'll be some fireworks, and it'll be an ugly, ugly sort of situation. But that's what we're to expect, I think. This is Jeff Poore filling in for Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5. Let us know what you think, 251-343-0106.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 1219 FM Talk 106.5. This is Midday Mobile. Jeff Poore hosting the show from Huntsville, WVNN Studios. Jeff sitting in for Sean Sullivan today. Sean will be back on Monday, but right now it's time to talk with Angelo from Mobile Bay Coins. Hey, Angelo.
Hey, how's it going today?
Hey, I'm doing great, and I would do even better if I'm able to make it over to Mobile Bay Coins after the show today. Maybe go ahead and get a head start on my holiday shopping, because I know holidays are coming up. You also have plenty of opportunities to have parties with coworkers, tons of great gift-giving opportunities, and Mobile Bay Coins is the place to go for the gifts.
Well, we certainly are, and one of the things I like to remind people of is it's a unique gift. So many of the pieces of jewelry we have are one-of-a-kind unique items. We have coins that are anywhere from 2,000 years old to modern gold and silver coins. The cool thing about the coins right now is all the gold and silver bullion is tax-free, so you're saving 10% if you're buying somebody a gift of bullion for Christmas.
Man, that is a great, great deal. And where are you guys located for people to come on by right now?
Yeah, we're in Midtown at 2204 Government Street. And if you want to check out some of the selection, just go into Facebook and like and follow Mobile Bay Coins there.
All right, we appreciate it, Angelo. We'll check back with you later this week.
See you soon, buddy.
That's Angelo from Mobile Bay Coins. Now I'll throw it back up to Huntsville, where Jeff Poor talking about the general elections wrapping up yesterday. And Jeff, you connected with us right now?
Yeah, I'm here. Yeah, so and kind of continuing on the midterms and last night's results. So we're gonna talk more about this at the bottom of the hour with my colleague at Yellhammer News, Sean Ross. But I think there's some statewide takeaways to perhaps. have more of a local perspective here, but the Democratic Party in Alabama is in trouble. They did nothing to build off of the Doug Jones win last year. You know, beginning of the year, they fielded a bunch of candidates. Things were looking like they were going to turn it around. The candidates made a lot of noise, but they weren't able to build off of that. And I think, you know, the results show that. Somehow or another, the Republicans expanded their supermajority in the state house. They picked up a seat. They held all these seats, even the close ones we were told to watch. I think the there's two in North Alabama, Johnny McMorrow and Dr. Larry Stutz in Northwest Alabama. In Northeast Alabama, there was Craig Ford, who's a former Democratic leader in the House, was running for Senate, but he wasn't running on the Democratic ticket, running as an independent. He got beat by Andrew Jones. That's in the Gadsden area. That wasn't even close. And there was one the one race that was a little closer than I expected it to be. It was Tom Watley down in Lee County. He was able to hold on by about 4 or 5 points in Lee County. He spent a bunch of money. He really got out the vote, but the Republicans still prevailed in all these Senate races. I think some of the House races. Obviously Steve McNair didn't win, but I think some of these House races, state House races, they went Republican, and to me there was no noise there. There's obviously nothing built off of the Doug Jones win, and the statewide races. I mean, that goes without saying. I don't think there were any surprises there. Perhaps the one, maybe a little bit of a surprise was Tom Parker and the Bob Vance race. People were talking about how close it could be. It was going to be the one race that it might not be a 15-point blowout, but maybe just a 10-point blowout. Nope. That in the end, it didn't matter. Republicans prevailed, and I think Alabama comes back and resumes its rightful place as one of the most Republican states in the country, even despite having one Democratic senator and Doug Jones. But what do the Democrats do from here? You know, back in the summer, there was a move to oust Nancy Worley, the Democratic Party chairwoman, who's nothing more than, I think many would agree with this. She's nothing more than a puppet for Joe Reed, who's the Alabama Democratic Caucus chairman. He's sort of the head of the Black Party, the Black power structure of the Democratic Party. And they kind of call the shots at the Democratic Party. But they didn't do a whole lot for their candidates statewide, and they certainly didn't do any for these candidates that were running for Congress. That was a clean sweep from top to bottom, with the exception of Terry Sewell, the lone Democrat in Alabama's 7th Congressional District, but she ran unopposed. I don't think it would have mattered if she had opposition. She probably would have won that district easily. That's the whole west side of Alabama. But, the Democratic Party's, they need to do some soul searching in Alabama. None of these places that were supposed to be Democrat-leaning, that we were supposed to watch, like the suburbs of Birmingham, Lee County, Tuscaloosa County, none of them went for Walt Maddox. Walt Maddox lost his home county by 50 votes. So that kind of tells you where the Democratic Party is right now. We're not a two-party state, and obviously all the money will be spent in these primaries, and we'll continue to kind of pick our candidates through the primary process instead of the general election process, I think, in a lot of races. But that's, where do the Democrats, you keep wondering, will this be the straw that breaks the camel's back? Will we finally see new leadership in the Alabama Democratic Party? I don't know. I think the results kind of bear themselves out, but it's going to take a lot more to unseat a very unpopular Nancy Worley. Doug Jones couldn't even do it at the Democratic Party summer meeting this year when they held their vote. He came and he endorsed the opposition Peck Fox trial lawyer, but the Democratic Party's in a weird place. It's the right now it's the African American vote, it's the trial lawyers, and it's sort of the grassroots activist wing of politics in Alabama that make up the Democratic Party, and they're not really changing many hearts and minds in Alabama. So perhaps if they were listening to Jeff Poore of Breitbart, and there's no reason in Yale Amber News, no reason to think that they would, but I would say they got to divorce themselves from the National Democratic Party. They got to divorce themselves on social issues. Kind of like, I would say this, maybe a little bit of like what Archer Davis did when he flirted with the idea, or he ran for governor, but he couldn't win his party's nomination. But he distanced himself from Obama. He was a Democrat. People kind of liked his politics. He wasn't all in for Obamacare. He did a lot of these things to sort of separate himself and come off as a more moderate Democrat. I think if you're a Democrat in Alabama, that's kind of the direction you need to start thinking about heading. How do you beat Kay Ivey? I mean, you lose by 20, 30 points in these races, and why even field a candidate? Why waste the money? Why waste the time and effort? Why not go give the money to charity or whatever it might be? Why do all these things you do when you field Democratic candidates? That will be the question, and I think that's where Democrats are going to have to look. Maybe they run against the status quo. I will say this. I think we got a legislative session coming up that it's going to be tough for Republicans. They're going to have to do some things that Republicans don't do. I think the gas tax is on the table. I think we're looking at, the lottery will finally be, we'll at least get on the ballot, and Republicans will have to stake out a position on the lottery and where they are on that. So, if you're a Democrat, maybe you can make a little noise about that. Maybe you can do some things in the legislature. But party-wide, man, I guess we're headed to a presidential election. It's going to be tough, depending on who the Democrats nominate. It's going to be tough for a Democrat in Alabama, unless you're in one of these solid blue districts or a solid blue county or whatever it is. You're going to be mired in kind of obscurity as a Democrat.
Hey, Jeff, but we have a phone. We have a caller on the line right now, 343-0106. Tim in Mobile wants to talk about the elections. Hey, Tim.
Hey, guys, how are you?
Doing great.
Doing well.
Been a while. Hey, look, I don't know if you guys caught it, but NBC, I think it's Savannah Guthrie, I believe, when they went to commercial, the unbiased NBC, which I watch just to monitor, she made the comment, "We have won the House." So you don't find that in any news reports, but everybody kind of knew that was the way they leaned. As far as those races, I think you guys talked about on the somebody mentioned one time that, number one, they shouldn't be able to spend that campaign war chest 15 elections down the line. There should be a time limit on that. But if you're going to run against somebody like Bill Nelson or, let's say, Shelby, I mean, you have no choice but to try to raise as much money. Look at Texas. That Democrat candidate stayed kind of low profile, but he raised more money than he hit a record. So, I mean, you want to get these 40-year lifers on either party out, you got to have some big bucks to even try to do it.
Well, thanks for that. Yeah, I agree with that. I think, Richard Shelby, he's hard to beat in a Republican primary just because he has such a war chest. Nelson, on the other hand, looks like he's going to go down. I think we're looking at a recount situation or something there, but Scott was the guy to do it. Scott won the governor's races in Florida just by brute force and brute fundraising ability. Shelby Bill Nelson is a guy I think was prepared for it, but that's the kind of candidate, that's the kind of effort it's going to take. In Alabama, I don't think you can do that. I don't think somebody's going to pony up the money to run against a Shelby, in a one-party state. Florida's different because it's more of a two-party state that lends itself to Republicans doing well. I think from top to bottom in Florida, the Republicans had a better night than I expected. Obviously, the House races down in South Florida didn't go well. But I think those races, obviously the gubernatorial race and the Senate race, look like they're going to be Republican. The Gillum thing was kind of a scare. That was your ideological Democrat. That's your Democrat right now. That a lot of Democrats, that's the way of the future. They look at Stacey Abrams. They look at Andrew Gillum. They look at Beto O'Rourke. That's the face of the future for the Democratic Party nationally. And it can't win electorally in Florida. It can't win electorally in those races. Then maybe they need to rethink that image a little bit more. I think they're going to go more in the direction of a Joe Biden. But that's kind of where we're at. This is Jeff Poore filling in for Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5. Let us know what you think, 251-343-0106.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5. Call Sean now at 343-0106.
All right, 12:35 FM Talk 106.5. This is Midday Mobile on a post-election Wednesday. Jeff Poore sitting in for Sean Sullivan today from the WVNN studios in Huntsville. And he'll be talking with Sean Ross from Yellowhammer News in just a second. First, head over to the phone lines and in Gulf Shores, Rusty wants to talk about the elections. Hey, Rusty.
Hey, how you doing? Thank you for taking my call. I'm a little bit naive when it comes to politics. I mean, I'm a Republican, but I lean Republican. I'm probably libertarian. But when I look at the political structure the way it is now, it's cash is king. That's how you get elected and everything. With today's social media, especially like in Alabama, I mean, would an independent candidate that had a good message, that with social media being what it is, would they even have a chance of running in Alabama? I'll hang up and listen. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Rusty.
Jeff? Yeah, I don't think so. I think a lot of people just go into their voting precinct and just check straight Republican.
Mm-hmm.
And independent, if you're an independent candidate, there's a lot involved there. You got to fill in the bubble, fill in the blank, do a lot of things like that. That I don't, that's a heavy lift. Just look at what happened in this Senate race, North Alabama, with Craig Ford running as an independent. So, and I don't necessarily think it's cash is king. I just think it's having an R next to your name is king. Now, how you get to that point where you have the R next to your name, that's where cash is king, perhaps. But even then, as we saw in that 2017 special election, Luther Strange had a lot more money than Roy Moore, and it didn't work out. So, we're just not in a place in Alabama, at least, where an independent voice can or an independent candidate, I think, can win. But that kind of leads me into my next guest here. Joining me on FM Talk 106.5, my Yellowhammer colleague, Sean Ross. Hey, Sean, thanks for joining the show today.
Hey, Jeff, happy to be with y'all. How's it going?
It's going well. So just in general, what your takeaway from last night, it looks like Republicans are here to stay for a while in Alabama.
Absolutely. And, at the end of the day, this is just a sign that state politics have become completely intertwined with national politics, because the state Democratic Party is tied to the National Democratic Party. That's why they're floundering, besides their incompetence. And on the state level, people love what Trump is doing. The economy is doing great nationally and in the state. And those are the results you saw yesterday. It was just an overwhelming affirmation of continuing what's going on both the national level and the state level with Governor Ivey.
Yeah, and I kind of expected Walt Maddox to do a little bit better, especially when he's coming out with and saying, as you wrote, that they were within the margin of error. It seems to me like if I'm Walt Maddox, I'm going to hire some new pollsters. Would you take a 20-point loss? But What were they seeing there? There was no silver lining to the Walt Maddox cloud.
Well, look, his campaign was certainly not run well. We could go bit by bit, whether it was that ridiculous first commercial and really every decision afterwards, every major decision at least. But as far as him saying he was within the margin of error, I think, again, it goes back to that first commercial saying, "I'll never lie to you." He was not within the margin of error, and he had no polling that said so. It's just not believable.
And it's the same people that run these Democratic campaigns every cycle. It's Chip Hill. It's the same guy that was running Parker Griffin's campaign. It's the same guy that Ron Sparks, Don Siegelman. And do Democrats ever get to the point where they say, hey, you know, like what the definition of insanity is, doing the same thing over and over again, expecting different results? Do Democrats ever get to that point, or are we just, they just kind of, well, we got to field a candidate. This is how we've always done things, and this is what we're going to do.
You know what, Jeff? It almost seems like they're to that point. I mean, we saw the failed coup this past, party elections with the Democrat. But Joe Reed just has the internal process so rigged that I don't know if they can oust Nancy Worley and Joe Reed using the party rules. I think it's going to take an intervention by the National Party, which is not likely, or a successful lawsuit for them to get them out of there, because right now Joe Reed just controls enough votes where they can't get him out. I mean, there was really no non-Joe Reed control votes who supported Nancy Worley in that election. Look, to their credit, as badly as they're running the party, they figured out how to keep control of it. They know the numbers.
On the other side of that coin, it seemed to me, though, you know, if you just take away everything, Ivy obviously would have been a favorite just because Alabama's a Republican state. But they really did the things they needed to do, like they were running in a competitive campaign. She hired all the smart people in Montgomery. She raised a bunch of money. She did. She toured the state, despite what the media may tell you about her health and being unwilling to debate. They ran the textbook operation campaign, and I think that's probably worth at least 5 points, wouldn't you think?
Oh, absolutely. Look, if you just go, I think a side-by-side comparison of her television ads, which are by far the most effective way to reach people, dollar for dollar, her ads were better. They were much better, not only in quality, but in likability and message. I think Walt Maddox's best ad was his last one about the lottery, just because he got the message right. But again, the quality was, not great either. He would have been much better off if he had just picked an issue like the lottery and said, "I'm going to fix this. This is what we're going to be talking about," instead of, trying to, first of all, denigrate the governor and pretend like she was, on her deathbed, and just silly, silly stuff like that. She actually made a quip about it in her victory speech last night, saying everyone was saying she was on her deathbed, but it just wasn't true. I think that got the biggest roar from the crowd of the night. Look, Jeff, you and I have both covered the governor's events. She's in great health. She is out there campaigning. She is out there working. Mainstream media outlets just don't want to talk about it.
Yeah, the media really tried to make her out like she's on her deathbed, and they're rolling her out of the old folks' home, and she's just showing up and kind of going through the motions. Some of those down ballot races, obviously, I don't think the lieutenant governor's race was, I think Will Boyd was just kind of a placeholder. They needed somebody on the ballot. But those other races, the attorney general race and the chief justice race in particular, those, a lot of political watchers, if you listen to some of these other media outlets, a political reporter or whatever, they thought they were going to be closer, that Steve Marshall was probably going to win, Tom Parker was probably going to win, but they were closer. That turned out not to be the case at all, and I maybe that's a sign of where the health of the Alabama Democratic Party is, if they can't, even those races weren't close.
Yeah, and my two biggest takeaways was, one, I think straight ticket voting by Republicans was really through the roof compared to the past. I mean, when you look at the amount of money spent by Will Boyd, for example, the Democratic nominee for lieutenant governor, which was nothing. He, you know, was able to garner about, I think, 37-38%. Bob Vance, on the other hand, spent about $1 million in his Chief Justice race and only got about 1% more. So, you know, and it's the same story for Walt Maddox. Money just didn't move the needle. It was the same thing for the Amendment 2 opposition. Spent $1.5 million. And look, that, you know,
that was a lot of Planned Parenthood. A lot of Planned Parenthood money, right?
So, look, money just wasn't moving the needle because at the end of the day, people just went in, they checked straight Republican, and they were so, I think, disgusted by the antics of the National Democratic Party that they were just not even considering Democrats.
Well, we got about a minute left here. Can you talk real quick about these until the break? These Senate races. I think a lot of people expected now that Johnny McMorrow, Larry Stutz race was close. I think a lot of people expected Andrew Jones, Craig Ford to be closer, and it looks to be the Tom Watley race in Lee County was closer than a lot of people expected.
Yeah, I'll start with Craig Ford. Look, he tried to. He's a Democrat. Was a Democratic minority leader for a long time. Tried to sell himself as an independent. That failed because, again, people didn't believe it, and he also lost straight ticket Democrat votes by switching to being an independent. So that was just a bad move by him. Andrew Jones really just shellacked him. Johnny McMorrow losing Senator Stutz actually surprised me, I'll be honest. I thought Johnny Mac was going to win that race, but again, that just comes down to the red wave and some of these rural areas. Johnny Mac lost because he was a Democrat. Tom Watley, people were expecting this race to be close just because of the relatively blue city of Auburn now.
Right.
But I think Tom Watley did a good job getting out campaigning. He's been campaigning for months, and he was able to keep that seat for the Republicans.
Well, he spent a bunch of money in that race. I know he was really hitting the ground hard. But we're going to hold you over for one more segment. This is Jeff Portfield in for Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5. Let us know what you think, 251-343-0106.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5. Call Sean now at 343-0106.
And it's Jeff Poore filling in for Sean Sullivan today from the studios of WVNN in Huntsville, sort of. Got Sean Ross on the line. We're going to talk about, I think now we're going to switch gears and talk a little bit about the upcoming legislative session. I think there was a little bit of, there were some rumblings about it. But now that we're kind of past the election and Republicans continue to have their stranglehold on politics in Alabama, how are they going to govern it, and more specifically, how are they going to legislate? Sean, what are you looking at here? What are some big ticket items that you think we're going to be looking at?
You know what? I think the first two are relatively obvious. We're going to be talking about infrastructure, which probably means a gas tax. We're also going to be talking about lottery proposals and probably sports betting too. You know what, and I've thought about it, and President Trump was kind of alluding to this in his remarks just a bit ago. I think that Democrats taking back the United States House actually helps President Trump pass an infrastructure package. I think he was having more problems fighting his own conservative base than he will trying to make a deal with the Democrats. So I think that plays into Alabama's gas tax push too, because their selling point, if they're smart, is going to be that, look, this is something that President Trump wants. We have to have the matching money. Look, our roads and bridges are crumbling. Put it down to the local level, talk about school buses not being able to get bridges and over bridges, things like that. I think we can see the gas tax pass, and in a weird way, Democrats nationally taking back the House helps with that. But, you know, Jeff, that's going to be the hot-button thing. And
is it going to be a tough?
Plays off of that too.
Do you think it's going to be tough for Republicans to really sell a tax? So, you know, they run as the tax cutting party, the fiscal responsibility party, and all these things. That seems to me that's going to be, you know, but it, you, when you talk to the leadership, when you talk to Del Marsh and Mac McCutcheon, they seem to indicate that they're kind of they're open to the idea, but they're not full all in for it.
Yeah, that's right. And look, I think as far as it goes on a policy level, they really are all in on it. The leadership is, and I think a large amount of the legislators are too. The politics of it is much trickier because, look, like you said, it's a tax, and that's the only word most of the conservative base is going to hear. They don't want to hear about the policy ramifications and do the math. So I think that's just how legislators need to figure out how to explain it to people, because there is a conservative way to do so, even besides just saying, hey, Trump's for this. In the long run, gas tax and improving infrastructure does save the average family in Alabama a lot of money per year. Seeing the studies on it, it's hundreds of dollars per year in fuel efficiency and repair costs. So, look, I think it is fiscally conservative. Can they package it in a way that looks fiscally conservative? That's the big question.
So you think you mentioned sports gambling and the lottery. Just a little bit about gambling. I think a lottery, yeah, I think you're right about that. I think it's going to make it on the ballot. I think it's going to be put to a vote. But sports gambling, does that have any sort of prayer in the near future in Alabama?
I would say no, just because all of the competing gambling interests in the state, whether it's the tribe, whether it is gambling currently in the state operating illegally, or whether it's out-of-state gambling in Mississippi, foremost, they're always at each other's knees. And at the end of the day, sports betting is just a bridge too far, because they all want a piece of the pie. They all want something more, and that's just not going to happen.
And on, I think one of the topics you kind of hear a little bit about is this idea that they're going to do something with expanding Medicaid or tinker with the idea, because these rural hospitals closing, those are just the politics of it are so toxic, you know, that they want people want their elected leaders to do something about it. Is there any appetite for going down that path of Medicaid expansion or anything like that, do you think?
You know, from the legislature's leadership, I've heard it said on arrival. You know, the governor has really hedged on whether she has an appetite for it or not. Obviously, she's explained why Mayor Maddox's, you know, push was, I think she called it, you know, essentially naive. I'm paraphrasing there, but, you know, he wasn't looking at the math right. She has never said that Medicaid expansion in and of itself is a bad thing. She just said we can't afford it. So whether she tries to see how we can afford it, that is something to look at. But I think you're going to be looking at more private sector solutions to Alabama healthcare than we are Medicaid. I mean, look, we have a Republican supermajority, and I think that's the direction they're going to go.
And we'll get you out of this hour on this. You got a piece up on yellowhammernews.com that caught my eye about Luther Strange calling on Jeff Sessions to run for Senate, to run for his old seat in 2020 against Doug Jones. Whether or not that happens, and I think I think it's probably getting near close to the end for Jeff Sessions as Attorney General. But is that a possibility? And man, where are we at with that race right now? I know Bradley Burns been out talking about it publicly, about exploring the option. But who are we looking at right now? And if Jeff Sessions does throw his hat in the ring, does that just clear out the field?
Yeah, we'll have a great new piece tomorrow for readers to look at on yellowhammernews.com. But to give you a preview, you know, I don't think Jeff Sessions running is the craziest thing in the world. I still don't think it's likely. But Bradley Byrne, Del Marsh, possibly Gary Palmer, I think those are the three names to look at. You know, I think Will Ainsworth is an intriguing possibility, actually. I know he was just elected as lieutenant governor, but at his age, with his fundraising prowess and his family's connections to the McConnell family, you know, I don't think that would be a bad option at all for the state, you know, to have somebody who could be in there for 30, 40 years and get some seniority. So that's kind of a dark horse pick right now. I think you'll see John Merrill be interested, but I don't think he'll run. I think he'll wait a cycle. That's pretty much it. Look, I think you'll see a lot of people dip their toe in the water, but there aren't many serious candidates besides those that I mentioned.
Yeah, because we saw a bunch kind of flirt with the idea in the 2017 special, and, well, you know, how that worked out. Sean, I want to thank you for coming on the show today. He's at yellowhammernews.com. Tell them where they can find you on Twitter.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me, Jeff. It's Sean, which is S-E-A-N _YHN. Follow me, and we have the breaking news every day in Alabama politics.
And this is Jeff Poor filling in for Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.